Well, it's the first show of September, and that can only mean one thing. Yes, dear listener, we're nearly at the end, but still plenty of things still up in the air. And joining me here at League Express Towers this week to hopefully catch some of them as they fall, we're joined by Mr. Aaron Bauer.
Hello.
Matthew Shaw is back.
Hello.
And with a new job, it's Mr. Alex Davis. So, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's show. More on that exciting breaking news shortly. I should say you've got a new job as well, Matthew, so it's exciting for everyone, really.
Like transfer staff deadline day.
It's not exciting for me.
It's a swap.
It's not exciting. No.
Just totally.
They make no difference.
Just carry on that way as normal. Did you play Earth, Wind and Fire to open the show this week?
Oh, that's such a cracking idea. I might do, actually.
There you go.
Anyway, welcome everyone to this week's Total Rugby League show. Loads of Rugby League chatter coming your way. Later in the show as well, we're going to be joined by the RFL's competition manager for the community game, David Raybould, will be joining us to talk about the Harry Jepson Trophy final this weekend, as well as the looming Southern Conference Grand Final. But before that, there is only one place we could start. And at this point, I'm going to start with a disclaimer. These are the views of the contributors involved. Eamon McManus.
What, we want my opinion on it. I think it was immensely disappointing that on the night St. Helens appeared to have taken the league leaders' shield far more seriously than last year, this whole fiasco has overshadowed it. I mean, it couldn't be any more rugby league, could it, if we tried? You know, it's just fantastic. Or we complain for a long time, and rightly so, that players, staff, coaches don't take the shield seriously. St. Helens do take it seriously this year. The celebrations underline that, and I think the more of that you'll see, by the way, the more it'll trickle onto the terraces and become more important. However,
quite extraordinary, I think, is the best way to put it.
Well, very bold claims.
It's just a massive shame that we're not talking about that League Leaders' Shield. We're talking about something else, and it's a massive shame. And to be honest, I think the comments are ridiculous.
The thing is, for me, Ben, nobody had suggested and brought up before Eamon McManus did the whole situation about Robert Hicks meeting Cal Fitzpatrick. He's brought up a complete... He's sent criticisms of refs into a completely new stratosphere here, because before, and the majority is, he got it wrong, referees are rubbish, always making wrong decisions. This is now suggesting that referees can't be impartial because of outside influences. It's gone to a new level now. It's ridiculous.
If a player questions the integrity of a match official, he gets the book thrown at him.
Yeah.
So why should Eamon McManus be able to do that and get away with it?
I mean, the game has to be very careful here, because you could get to the stage where, you know, chairman or head coaches are saying all kinds of things, and the RFL have to take that into account when they're hiring referees for matches. And
well,
you don't want to get to that stage, do you?
What I will say, and it might well be unpopular, is I thought his second statement on Sunday, which they sort of threw out under a bit of a cloud, really, they didn't try to promote it or anything like that, certainly explained his point of view a little bit more clearly. The first set of programme notes were just looked like they were written in haste. Nobody's checked them. Nobody's gone to him and said, look, are you sure about this? The second statement was a little bit more considered. And I think he made a rational point in the sense of it was a situation that could have been avoided, in the sense of, look, this has all happened with Robert Hicks. Do you know, is he the only guy capable of refereeing the cup final this year? I'm not for a minute agreeing with him, and Manus, by the way, that Robert Hicks.
What message would it have said if he didn't referee the Challenge Cup final?
Well, it wouldn't have made a blind bit of difference, because you don't say this is why he isn't a referee.
I think what's been overshadowed there is what happened to Robert Hicks before
if he wasn't appointed, it wouldn't be a Hicks omission. No, it would be someone else has done really well.
But Ben, the thing is, it was never an issue until Eamon McManus brought up. Nobody had said, this is ridiculous, he was with Cal Fitzpatrick the other week. I'm fed up of referees being blamed for everything. Me and Aaron, on the whole, agree with this, and the vast majority of the press do. The standard of refereeing really isn't that bad. There are mistakes. Of course there are mistakes.
The game's faster.
Yeah, there's going to be mistakes. Is the standard of refereeing as bad as people want to make it out to be? The reality is, for me, on the whole, the press, as a collective group, are the more impartial people within a stadium, right? Yeah, compared to the fans. The amount of games that we go to, and I'll speak from personal experience, where I don't think the referee's had a bad game. In fact, I think he's had a decent game, not really noticed him. And he'll come out and you'll just see on social media or when you're walking out the green, ref, we're awful. I didn't think it was. I thought it was fine. I think people are just so one-eyed about it. and only see it through their perspective.
It's a different level for referees. We're all human. Players make mistakes. Referees make mistakes. But the fans expect the referees to get everything right. And the players don't. The coaches don't. The management don't. No one gets it all right. So why should referees be different?
There's a very easy way to sort all this out. Captain's challenge. Review system, like in cricket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Put the responsibility on the players and the coaches. If they don't review it and it turns out to be wrong, tough.
Well, we missed it. We all saw it in the Ashes.
Yeah. Australia didn't use the review properly.
Yeah, they reviewed it wrong.
How would you implement it, though? Like, what could you review? Like, where would
anything that may go to the video referee.
Right, okay.
Two reviews a team every game.
For example, from a St Helens perspective, there was a try, wasn't there, disallowed right at the end last week for obstruction, I think it was.
Yeah.
And Justin Albert wasn't happy with that. That could be one of those.
Two reviews a team. Yeah. If you get it right, you keep your review. Yeah. If you get it wrong, you lose your review.
So in theory, you should be able to get every decision right if you get your reviews right.
And then
it can't be the referee's fault. It has to be on the players.
Coaches and chairmen and owners can't come out then and say, oh, he's got it wrong. Well, why don't you review it?
Now, unfortunately, though, in this instance, the chairman has come out and said things. The lid needs putting back on this, doesn't it? Because you can't go into the playoffs with this hanging over a senior referee. It needs to
bring it to happen because
something needs to happen, though, the lid
needed putting on Catalan's Warrington weeks ago, but it's still going on. It's still dragging out. This ain't going to go well. It is going to go away because they're not going to do anything to McManus, are they? It's just done. In the RFL's eyes, they've made their statement. That's it. It's done. But they need to be seen to be coming down on him hard, and I'm not sure as a governing body they are capable of such jurisdiction, I don't think.
Does Super League need to do something?
Super League could do something, but I know you would probably get a likely response from Super League that anything involving match officials is to do with the RFL, not to do with Super League.
Is the other thing, though? Right. So he said in his initial comments that the standard of refereeing has been driving spectators away from the game. Before the split, it was the RFL's fault. Now it's referees' fault. How about the fact they look at themselves and go, actually, what are we not doing right? Absolutely. It's same old rugby league. Nobody, blame. Nobody, no accountability
nobody
for anything.
Turns up to what to a game thinking about the referee. No one. It's all about the players. The referee doesn't have any bearing on who turns up to what game.
But anyway, that's the politics away from that. Let's talk about the rugby. And some important matches coming up this weekend when it comes to Super League. We've literally just got two rounds left and still all to play for a lot of teams. Let's start with the Thursday night TV game, Castleford against Hull. I'll come to you first, Alex. This is a...
Don't say we.
How do you think your boys are going to get on? Tell us how it is.
This is a must win for Castleford if they're going to get in the playoffs.
Well, absolutely. If Castleford win both their games, they get into the top five. And it's the same with Hull. Obviously, Hull are coming off the back of a really poor defeat against Huddersfield, and Castleford did okay against the Saints. Losing 4-0 away at St Helens is a pretty decent result for them, to be perfectly honest.
How bad was that game, though? Well, oh, my God.
In recent years, Castleford have never got anywhere near Saints. So to come only 4 points short is probably not bad.
Did get nil, though.
But only one try.
Did get nil, though.
The incentive is there, though, for Castleford, because if they win, they knock Hull out the playoff positions heading into the last weekend.
Yeah. If they win both the games, they're in the top five, and they know that.
And what about the Luke Gayle speculation that's floating around?
Leeds won't sign him.
It's weird because we've not seen Gayle for almost 2 years. What is he going to be like after these injuries? Is it worth Castleford cashing in on him right now?
Dependent on the fees, whether it's a good deal or not for Cast.
Is it a gamble, though, for Leeds a bit?
I think so. Definitely. I think it is in the terms of in terms of what Alex has just said about he hasn't played pretty much in its entirety for 2 years now. The game has changed. Luke Gayle has changed, I imagine. His body has changed. You know, I think he'll be 32 when he comes back, I think. You know... I'm sure he's still a very, very good player, and he's by no means over the hill at 32. I'm nearly 32. I hope I'm not over the hill.
I'd love to see him recreate his form, but he wouldn't be the first player that hadn't recreated his form after so long out of the game.
I think it would take a six-figure fee and some for Castleford to sell, probably about 150-160, and I think they'd consider it. If Castleford got a replacement,
that's the key,
they got the cash that they were looking for, and obviously Gayle would favour a move to Leeds to finish his career, or certainly for a last big deal. I think it's a move that benefits everyone. I think Castleford can let Luke Gayle leave knowing we've got a replacement, we've got cash, and we've let a player leave who hasn't played for 2 years, and we've coped all right without him for 2 years. Not brilliantly, but they've coped all right without him. Leeds get the scrum half that they believe they want, although what that does for Richie Milo, I'm not sure. Luke Gayle gets his move to his hometown club, the club he was with as a junior. I think it's a move that works for absolutely everyone. I don't think anyone comes out of it losing.
That's true, but I think Cass need the replacement.
Yeah, that's important. Thing.
You're looking around thinking, who's out there? Will he go to Australia? Will they look closer to home? Well, time will tell.
I mean, that's the thing for me. The two questions are how the Leeds make the space. They obviously got the money to pay the transfer fee.
There's a lot of players coming off cap.
But then there's the Myler thing, because they're not going to want Myler on the cap if he's not going to play, because he's on a big salary.
Yeah, that's the one thing of the deal nobody's considering, really, that how it affects a player who's under contract at Leeds, playing at Leeds, all right, might not be Jonathan Thurston by any stretch of the imagination, but playing okay. You know, Leeds are going to have to find him a home, and there's no guarantees in a salary cap sport that you're going to be able to find a halfback on a decent salary, a home readily, all that easily.
The only club in Super League that seemingly is in need of a halfback is Hull KR. Drinkwater seems to be on his way. Maguire's retiring. I know they've got Abdul coming in.
Smith had Milo at Warrington, didn't he, as well?
So that maybe that would be an option, but there's not many. And as Alex says, who's the replacement? Because likewise, there aren't many players knocking around. And Gayle's obviously on a big salary, signed a new deal after he got Man of Steel. Did have the cap space to get someone big, but, you know.
I think if Castleford if it happened, Castleford got a replacement and big money, and they explained it to the fans like that, I think most Castleford fans would be reasonable enough to accept that as a good deal for the club.
Well, that's off the pitch. On the pitch, Castleford against Hull this weekend. Just a reminder of how both teams finished their seasons next weekend. Castleford have got Wigan away. Hull have got St Helens at home.
But Hull, I saw a stat the other day. Hull have won 17 out of their last 40 home games, which is horrific, really, isn't it? I mean, I think they'd rather finish fifth in that regard and play every game away from home in the playoffs. I actually think probably do make them favourites on Thursday night. I think they will win, to be honest.
I think got Kelly back as well, haven't they?
The winner of Cass Hull makes the playoffs.
Yeah, I think that's the battle for fifth, yeah.
So not much riding on this game then. Right, let's talk about the other game that's not got much riding on it when it comes to the TV matches this weekend. Friday night, Hull KR against London. Bang. London, if they don't win this, are down.
Hull KR are going down, aren't they? Hull KR? No, they're not. No, they're not.
Are you back on board now?
What? Oh, I changed my mind. I can't believe I flipped, didn't I?
I have been consistent, Ben, that Hull KR will go down, and I'm going to stick with that. I'll tell you what. We talk about Hull KR, Hull FC being bad at home. Every game Hull KR have had that's been big at home, they've lost.
Yeah, they'll beat London on Friday night. I'm going to flip back. I've flirted with Huddersfield for a week or so, and then they went and won at blooming old.
Well, this is speculation season, as we proved there with Luke Gayle. Tony Smith, good news from a Hull KR perspective, staying for 3 years, which is brilliant considering the groundwork that's being put in there for the next 3 years.
I think it's a very good appointment.
From a London perspective, Danny Ward's come out and says he wants to stay, which will be good for London. Yeah. But still, it would be better for Danny Ward if he was a head coach of a Super League London. So
absolutely, yeah. But I think irrespective of what happens this year, his stock has gone up massively, and I think it will continue to do so in the Championship next year. If Toronto win the playoffs, London would start 2020 as heavy favourites to go straight back up through the playoffs next year.
Would they?
Yes.
What, over to lose?
I'm not sure about that.
Yeah, they definitely
would. Just because of the amount of players they're losing.
Well, they'll be certainly top two then. No one's tipping them to finish seventh.
I don't think they'd be heavy favourites. I think they'd be obviously up there, but heavy favourites.
We can start to speculate that about at 10 o'clock on Friday night.
That's for next series. Let's say then that obviously what's coming up for Hull KR in London, they finish the season. Hull KR, Salford away.
Yeah.
Salford could need that.
Salford could be in by then though, couldn't they?
I know, but they might be in. They might be in the top two. And London, obviously, as we've been foretelling since April, they've got Wakefield.
I think the reality is if London win both games, they'll stay up.
Well, I think they've got to win both games.
They have to win both games. Yeah. But I think if they do, they will.
But
it's a big ask. It's a big ask, but not out of the realms of possibility.
The Huddersfield result was a bit of a nail in the coffin for London, really.
Yeah, that has killed.
I think they were the ones they were really after Huddersfield, because they've got Saints on Friday, aren't they, Huddersfield? And then they finish with Catalans, who admittedly are absolutely disgraceful at the minute. But I think Alex is right. That was a big blow.
The Giants have just shown every now and again that they've got something about them, like that win at Salford about a month ago, and then the win at Hull FC.
This is why I was saying last week, I don't think they'll go down, because just every now and again they conjure up something.
Jordan Abdul, again, that'll be good.
Let's talk about from a Wakefield perspective, because obviously that could be a very important game next week. They don't want it to be an important game.
Well,
to make sure it doesn't happen, they've got Warrington away this weekend.
Yeah,
tough.
Very tough.
Is it?
They've lost six league games in a row, but as Stefan Ratchford rightly says, in and amongst that six-game losing run, they've beaten Hull in a semi-final and St Helens in a final. So they're not in drastically dire, disastrous form that some people are making them out to be, because they won the Cup at Wembley 2 weeks ago. But it'd be tough for Wakefield. I saw them on Sunday. I've stuck with my view all year that they're too good to go down. I think they are. I think had they not been on the end of a very... very suspicious call when Liam Marshall taps the ball wide of the mark and goes up and scores on Sunday. They could well have won that game. They were in it until the final 20 seconds when Sam Powell scored. And Wigan are the form team in the country, by the way. So that reinforces my view that even if it was going to go down to a £4 million game on the last weekend of the season, they would be good enough. I think this is actually more about Warrington than it is Wakefield. Warrington need a win more than Wakefield do, because... really, and I said this in my report on Sunday, that Wakefield's game on Sunday wasn't the most important game for Wakefield. The most important game for Wakefield on Sunday was making sure London got beat in Ealing, which they did. And if London continue to lose, then it doesn't really matter what Wakefield do, because they're already 2 points clear with a significantly better points difference. So if London get beat on, if London get beat on Friday and Wakefield get beat, do London have to win by about 90 on the final day at Wakefield to send Wakefield down? It's something ridiculous like that, isn't it?
Wakefield aren't going down.
But it's more about Warrington. It's Warrington. Warrington need a win in the league just to allay any fears of being dragged into a final day battle for the top five.
I was looking at the Super League website, obviously preparing for the show as I often do. Is it a bit weird that all the games are a bit staggered and not happening at the same time next week, because there is. Yeah. Some important,
What's the running order next week?
I've no idea.
Well, they haven't announced TV scheduling yet, have they?
All right. And at Wakefield, they'll definitely be for Sunday, won't
they? Do you think it should be?
They should all be
on the same day for such an important final day of the season.
Yeah, they should.
Nah. Because then your press coverage is just non-existent for days.
But if you know what result you need
have a slight problem with it. I think there's a... If Brisbane lose, then I think that Cronulla and West can draw, and they both get into the
Austria Germany.
I just think you save a problem if you just play them all at the same time. I understand Aaron's point, but
I used to enjoy the Sky Sports split screen stuff. It was good.
I don't know. I think it was a one off on a Friday, all games on, and doing something like that'd be all right. But anyway.
So Wakefield against Warrington this weekend, and Hull KR against London, very, very important. Huddersfield, and I know what you said, but Huddersfield are travelling to St Helens as well. That could be an important game for Huddersfield if results go a certain way.
Only if London win, Everyone is basically sweating. Everyone's a Hull KR fan this weekend. Everyone wants Hull KR to get the job done, like everyone was a Leeds fan last weekend.
Only thing Huddersfield need to do is avoid an absolute mauling. For points, different
Huddersfield
purposes.
Huddersfield are all right now. Huddersfield are fine.
Head coach is strongly denying he's off.
As he would, because he's not.
Huddersfield finished the season at home to Catalans.
They'll win that anyway, won't they?
Should we discuss Catalans?
No. They're an embarrassment. They're an absolute disgrace.
This is like the fourth week we've said the same thing about them. They're just not breaking out of it, are they?
Interesting thing. French press have said today that Gouache has savaged the players, but he's offered McNamara a contract extension, which is quite nice to see, actually, because I think I'm a Steve McNamara fan. I think he's done what he did last year underlines that he's done a good job. But you can't get away from the fact that there is a culture problem in the south of France. It happens every year. you almost feel like you're just raking over old ground every year when you talk about it. The problem in Perpignan lies deeper than the head coach.
The reality is, with the squads that they've had over the course of the last 10 years, they should have won more than a Challenge Cup.
I think we're safe in saying they're not going to make the playoffs now.
No, because the points difference is that bad.
But McNamara has said they're facing the two most important games of the season coming up.
Don't really agree with that, but...
Yeah.
Okay. Who do they play on for? Oh, they play
Wigan.
Wigan
away. Wigan could seal second if Wigan win, Warrington, Salford and Hull lose. Yeah. Which is quite remarkable considering where Wigan were for large chunks of this show over this past season.
They look ominous.
Are they the favourites to win the whole thing?
No, Salford, Aaron, as we've discussed.
Wigan are the favourites because of the past reputation.
Yeah, they've been to finals and done it since.
Yeah. And Salford haven't been to finals.
Adrian Lamb looks like he's enjoying himself.
Mm. Wigan look like they're enjoying themselves.
Because he put his neck on the block in the first few weeks of the season and he got roundly criticised by the press as well. Let's not pretend the press weren't involved. When he said, we'll come good, we'll be in top five. Yeah. And it looked like a ridiculous statement when they were third bottom of the table. But fair play to him. They've come good. Hardacre... He's a shining example of how it's taken them a bit of time. It was always going to take him a bit of time to get back to the swing of things. He looks great again. Now he's faultless at the back. Williams looks like a different man with the pressure of the Canberra move off his shoulders. And they just look in ominous form. The kids, I mean, Smithies for me is...
Sensational.
Phenomenal.
I'd have had him in GB squad, mate.
You can't, yeah. But they look like the favourites to me.
I would have had him in over Stevie Ward, Aaron.
Whatever.
Big fan of Stevie Ward, but he's not played.
There's no point getting really annoyed about the training.
No, absolutely.
No, there isn't.
Anyway, I've not even mentioned it.
Salford for the grand final.
Definitely. Well, let's talk about Salford. Leeds against Salford this weekend. Salford finishing the season with Hull KR at home next week. Lowe here returning to Headingley. That's been quite a transformation from where he was at the start of the season to where he is now.
Again, it comes back to what we said about Leeds. Like, it's no surprise that now Richie Myler can do what he does and support play that his form's improved. But Lollahier is a running halfback too, and he and between them they were both trying to do a bit of everything. It didn't work. Lollahier is now in a position where he can just run, and they get the best out of him. That's why we're better at fullback, because he could run.
And we should say Paul Roll is there in the background as well, and Josh Johnson is staying for next season. Mm-hmm. So it seems to be after all the concerns about Salford that there is a bit of stability there perhaps for next year and beyond.
Yeah, they've recruited well, haven't they? They've recruited well for next year. So good on them.
Yeah, good on them, but this season's by no means over for them yet.
Jeez. Oh, no.
I still have visions of Jackson Hastings scoring the winning try in the final against Wigan and celebrating in front of the Wigan like a lunatic.
The biggest compliment you can give Salford is I don't think anyone here around this table right now would be stunned or shocked if Salford were in the grand final.
Oh, I'd love it.
They could beat
anyone.
Love
it if they made the grand final. I'm on record saying I hope they make the grand final.
They've won six on the bounce, Ben, and the lowest margin of victory they've had is 12 points. It's not like the scraping wins out. They're absolutely battering teams.
I mean, obviously, we'll discuss the playoffs in a lot more detail when we know where everyone has finished, but St Helens are going into this period a bit.
Everyone else is playing playoff standard rugby in terms of importance of games.
It's a tough gig, that, isn't it? When it comes down to it.
Between the cup final and the grand final, assuming they get to the grand final, Saints will have had maybe one meaningful game in 5 weeks, which, when Castleford are the polar opposite, really, aren't they? That if they get in, having played three of the best teams in the comp, they're battle hardened for the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Salford are the same, Warrington are the same. Hull are the same. Everyone, in fact, other than St Helens, is going to be battle-hardened for the playoffs. St Helens are in a unique position, and we're only speculating. We won't know how significant it's been until the dust settles after the grand final, whether they needed a run of important, tough fixtures to get them ready for the playoffs. As things stand, I think one of the reasons I favour Wigan is because they are playing tough, significant games that will battle on them for the playoffs.
And this is why I know that in the Championship a lot of people are concerned about Toronto.
Yeah.
Because Toronto have been over in Toronto for ages. A lot of the teams aren't going with strong teams. They haven't had the intensity that Fev have, they had that York game. Yeah. York have played Lee.
Yeah, Lee played York last week, yeah.
Toronto haven't had that. Now, they have a very good coach who's been there, done it in all sorts of different circumstances at higher level than this, but it does, you have to think it's a disadvantage that they've not had the games that these other clubs
have.
That's
the difference for me this year with Toronto, the head coach. I think that's what will get them over the line.
Well, we might as well go to the championship now then. And just to say congratulations to Featherston and Ryan Carr, we have to say, because he came in very late in the day, didn't he?
And you like know, eight players, didn't they, before the season started?
Got into the, now he confirmed into the playoffs. So commiserations to Bradford and Sheffield.
I'll tell you what about Featherston as well, though. It's not just that they're winning. The brand of rugby they're playing is great. They play a really attractive brand of rugby, and good on him. He has done a fantastic job as Ryan Carr. Really good job.
Shall we talk about the occasion at Oddsall while we're talking about the championship? Good crowd.
It was a good crowd, wasn't it? You can't deny that.
A good performance from the home team as well. And
7,500, I mean, the crowds some championship teams could only dream of, really, in fantasy land, isn't it? It's, you know, who knows if it'll be the last ever game at Oddsall. I don't know.
I mean, we covered it in great detail.
We did, yeah.
But it was sad. It was sad.
I said on social media on Sunday that, obviously living in the area, my dad and his friends went to the game, first game they've been to for a while, because they were just alienated with all the lies that's happened over the last few years. And they were quite emotional because they've stood on those terraces for 40, 45 years, watching Ellery Hanley, Keith Mumby, Jeff Gration, Vinny Colo, everyone. And for it all to end and to never be able to go back there, is sad when you know you're not even going to play in the blooming city next year. That's doubly sad. So you could sense the emotion actually from people who were in the pubs on Sunday night and stuff. And it's sad for Bradford supporters. And again, like anything that's happened with Bradford over the last decade, the people who feel it the most are the supporters. They're the ones who are left as collateral damage. I just hope this is as bad as it gets for them.
Well, sending best wishes to those supporters as well, we should say. Also, commiserations to Barrow. It's finally happened. Good social media, though, in the match against Toronto. Yeah. It was way to go down properly. So hope Barrow bounce back. Just while we're talking about Championship, Andy Mays has been in the press, and you know there's been a bit of speculation with regards to the Manchester thing. We've had Andy Mays on the show talking about the idea of Manchester. There's no rush, is there? But it does point to the direction of travel that, you know, if a club likes, I mean, is it the Sydney Roosters who technically aren't called the Sydney Roosters? They've actually got a different name.
East Suburbs.
I like the idea. I understand the thinking behind the idea. I think the concern I have is that you have to really be really, really good in executing it. It's not something you can do half-hearted. You can say, oh, right, we're Manchester Lions now. You have to really, really go hard at it, promoting it, doing this. Is the money there to do it justice and to really push out of it and make sure that you do enough to not alienate your locals and get your newbies? That's the question for me. It's one of those, it's easy to sit on the fence and say, time will tell if it's the right move. Is there going to be enough there, enough resource there for Swinton to really make it a success?
Manchester.
I like your impressions, Aaron. Anyway, that's our look at the championship. What about League One?
Congratulations to Whitehaven.
Whitehaven are nearly there. Oldham have got a better points difference.
Whitehaven play Coventry.
They do play Coventry, and Oldham have got to play Hunslet. So,
is that an our league?
Hmm?
Good. So it should be. Is it at Whitehaven? Yeah, it is, isn't it?
No, it's not. It's away.
In rugby.
Well, yes.
Fitting park.
I mean, I think they wanted to get it done last weekend, and I think Ralph Rimmer was at Whitehaven with the title ready to go. They probably are going to seal the deal this weekend.
I think so.
Fair play to Oldham for keeping it going as long as they have.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way Workington recruited, or certainly the calibre of players Workington have got, the way Doncaster went close last year, Newcastle were heavy favourites to win the whole thing. I don't think anyone would have had a top two of Whitehaven and Oldham. That's assuming Oldham stay second. I know Newcastle can get ahead of them, can't they? But just as significant as it's been for Whitehaven to finish top, I think Oldham getting into second is a testament to the work Scott Naylor has done there. And I think few people would begrudge Scott Naylor's time at Oldham, finishing with getting them into the Championship. He's done a brilliant job there. He's been there a long time. It'll be a hell of a battle between them and Newcastle, but I do think that's what it's going to come down to, because it's going to take a minor miracle for Whitehaven to slip up, I think. And what a story.
It's just a great plug for Cumbrian Rugby League. And go back to the Gary Charlton.
Yeah, and a testament for the depth of talent that's in Cumbria. You don't need to go and sign loads of players. What the point I'm making is there is the player pool in Cumbria to get a winning side together.
Yeah, I think they've probably...
It's remarkable as well, at the same time, Workerton's done the same thing.
Yeah, so
but that's two clubs.
And good that someone's going up when Barrow are going down, because I think a Cumbrian team in the Championship's quite important.
Well, and the thing is as well, obviously, you look at the model that they've set up. Like Alex said, Gary Charlton, local coach, worked in the amateur game, has come up. It's predominantly local players as well. I think there's proof that there's a model there to follow. Barrow obviously went down a different route, signed some Aussies, signed some PNG lads, Gareth Hawk. Hasn't worked, so maybe it's a way forward.
Well, I feel like we should just talk about the playoffs in both Championship and League One, because barring a couple of results in the next week or so, this is pretty much it, isn't it, with regards to the order as well.
Yeah.
And so it's in League One, it's Oldham, Newcastle, Hunslet, and Doncaster and Workington. Workington and Doncaster go head to head this weekend, incidentally, and the winner will finish fifth. So. Where do we think? Is it still Newcastle favourites in League One?
Well, league position suggests Oldham are favourites. I think Newcastle obviously had a very, very slow start, didn't they? And they've pulled it right back. So I would suggest over the last 10 or 12 games, Newcastle probably have the better form. However, I think home advantage in these playoffs are going to be absolutely enormous. And the final, correct me if I'm wrong, the final is going to be the home of the highest ranked team. So it'll be a great occasion. It'll be on our league. I would imagine the local community will get right behind them. It's not like they get the worst crowds in the world, Oldham, is it? So that would be a fantastic playoff final. I think that'll be a great final.
I think in the Championship, four of the five play each other on Saturday, mm-hmm. which is interesting.
Yeah.
Works in York's favour as well, because they'll know if they have to go to Halifax and get a result to finish either second or not. And that will probably dictate on what sort of team they put against Halifax.
Well, third as well.
They'll know if they need to get a result, won't
who's
they?
Who's the dark horse in... Because obviously everyone could go, oh, it's Toronto's. Featherstone's the dark horse
Matt's
for you, Aaron.
Matt's touched on it, yeah, the best rugby.
Okie dokie. Oh, interesting.
Toulouse. The thing with Toulouse...
Everyone can you call Toulouse a dark horse? I don't know if you can. I just assume Ben meant out of family.
I mean, I think they're all dark horses compared to Toronto, aren't they?
Yes.
It's probably fair, yeah.
But if you were to assume Toronto and Toulouse are the strongest two teams, therefore that would be
if
the final.
If Toulouse were to get to the grand final, they, for me, would be the most dangerous team for Toronto. But Toulouse are just a little bit inconsistent.
York's a phenomenal story, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
We've got some great stories this season, but two and a half years away from going to the wall, now playing for the right to get in the Super
League
with a new stadium coming.
Pound for pound achievements now.
Incredible.
Saints, would, if they'd have won the treble, would have had to have been the main thing. I think now, if you're looking at...
Salford, York and Whitehaven.
Yeah. And London, if they were to stay up.
If they were to stay up.
So, yeah.
Well, it's not just the top three divisions which are coming to an exciting climax in the coming month. The Southern Conference, which has been relaunched this season, is also about to come to an end, with the grand final taking place next Saturday. And in the week, I caught up with the RFL's competition manager for the community game, David Raybould, to find out more about how the competition has been this season.
Yeah, Ben, it's the inaugural season in 2019, and it's gone really well. You never know with new competitions how some of the clubs might fare, but I think majority of the clubs have gone really well. The number of games taking place has been a real positive for us. The number of competitive games that have taken place throughout the season, which is one of the reasons why I want to do this competition, has been really positive. Well, when we looked at launching a competition, we wanted to have a standards-driven competition, so getting the clubs that can compete at an higher level. But we've also been keen that clubs look to start developing their own pathways and linking into either local junior clubs or developing their own junior clubs if they don't exist. And it's also an opportunity to give all the clubs in the South something to strive towards. But also it's given us opportunity to reinvigorate the regional competitions that have been running for a number of years. And some of these teams have moved into the Southern Conference League that have been the top teams in the regions for a number of years. So it's breathed some new life into those competitions as well.
A good number of players playing regular rugby league is always a good thing. What numbers are we talking about?
Yeah, so the Southern Conference League this year, with the clubs that participate, we've had over 1,000 players registered. We've got 1,080 players registered. Good numbers. Obviously, we've nothing to compare it to, because the competition didn't run in 2017. or 2018. So it's but that's certainly a good level of number of players. And I think the key thing is the fact that it's not decimated the numbers of the regional competition. So the regional competition have still all managed to survive. And like the London Men's League, for example, has been as strong as it's been for a number of years because the teams in there have a similar ability. So when we review at the end of the season, we'll see there'll be more games taking place in the South, because we've got the better teams playing against each other weekly, which means it's easier for the teams who might not be at that level to get games on, so that they're not as daunted by going to play some of the teams who might be too good for them. And rather than give a walkover, then obviously the playing teams were of similar ability, so they're getting those games on. So yeah, the numbers that have been promising and the fact that the number of games that have taken place has been really positive. So I think by the time we get to next Saturday, the 14th, we should have 82 games played across the Southern Conference League.
You mentioned, you know, where these clubs are. I mean, for those people unaware, Old Golds and Hemel Stags are in this competition, and clubs like Torvine and Valley Cougars and clubs like Bedford Tigers have got their own ground. So the calibre of clubs there, I mean, like you say, it's been a good season with regards to getting games on and getting competitions going, and it really is turning into a thriving Step 4 competition.
Yeah, that's right. The number of clubs have been real positive for us. I mean, you touched on the Bedford Tigers there. As you say, Rob Ashton down there, he's effectively developed his own junior competition within Bedford. Rather than just grow a junior team at Bedford Tigers, they've gone out to try and develop like a county-wide rugby league development programme. And they've got over 100 juniors that have played on a 10-week junior season. Again, it's all about building to the top end at Bedford Tigers, at the top of that pyramid. Brixton Bulls, they've run two teams, so whilst they finished bottom of the competition, they've turned two teams out every week. Haven't forfeited a fixture in either the London Men's League or the Southern Conference League. They're growing from the bottom up with a successful primary rugby league programme. So yeah, they're going really well.
And it's interesting as well, obviously it's been regionalised, so you've got East and West. That's all come together this past weekend for the quarterfinal stage. So it's an interesting, you know, a good way of throwing these teams together at this stage of the season to see how far they've developed.
Yeah, one of the challenges when you do any kind of a national level competition or regional or southern competition is the number of clubs who are staging their development to be able to play at a Tier 4 competition, and then the number of clubs you've got in a specific geographic area makes it difficult. So one of the issues we had with the old Conference League South that ran was the sheer geography of the teams in that. So you had teams from Valley Cougars up to Nottingham Outlaws and across to London Chargers, and that just places a massive burden on the clubs that they don't necessarily have the resources some of the clubs in the north would have to do that. And even some of the clubs in the north would struggle with that. So we were keen that when we brought Southern Conference League in, we regionalised it by East and West to help cut down on some of that travel. But ultimately, because it is a national competition, there's an element of bringing that together, much like in the NFL. So that's what we've tried to do. And yeah, you're right, the quarterfinals at the weekend. So each of the pools both got four places in the quarterfinals. And we went into the semi-finals this weekend, where we've got three of the teams from the East, London Chargers, Hammersmith Hill Hoist and West Warriors. And then Valley Cougars from the West Division, they saw off Bedford Tigers.
And it's not just about Step 4 as well. I mean, like you touched upon, it was about reinvigorating the game in the South, and the Harry Jepson Trophy continues, and very, very important to the game in the South.
Yes, it is. And it means a lot to the clubs down there. Since 23rd year now, which has got a lot of history and heritage in terms of the game in the South of England. So it's in its 23rd year now. What the Southern Conference League done, as I mentioned earlier, is reinvigorate some of those regional competitions and give an opportunity for new clubs to be part of that. So we've seen the Somerset Vikings play the Devon Sharks in the qualifier. Devon Sharks won through there, so they played against Sherwood Wolf Hunt, who were the Midlands champions. And then at the weekend just gone, we've also had Brentwood Eels playing the West Warriors A team. And West Warriors have come out on top on that. So the Harry Jepson final on Sunday, taking place at Emerald Stags. Bob Brown's looking after the once again. You've got Sherwood Wolfhunt against the West Warriors A team. So the Sherwood Wolfhunt have been pretty competitive in the Midlands this year. They've got a number of lads who've played in the Midlands Regional Academy, and a couple of lads who've played semi-professionally. And the West Warriors, obviously, their makeup is very much Antipodean, and lots of Kiwi lads are playing that team, so it should be a great game on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've spoken to the Sherwood Wolf, and you know, like all the Midlands clubs, they're developing their own youth pathways and stuff like that. All very positive, heading towards the future. Speaking of the future, then obviously this is the inaugural season of the Southern Conference, baby steps and all that. But you know, there's some great clubs like Sherwood Wolf. You know, there's other clubs in the Southwest like you touched upon who aren't part of this league at the moment. Is there room for growth as the seasons progress, do you feel?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. One of the things we want to do is give clubs something to aim for. It was about making it a standards-driven competition, much like the National Commerce League is in the north of England, and clubs strive to be in that. And every year, the National Commerce League have a number of clubs from the regions wanting to play at that level of competition. It's the same in the south, but we also need to try and balance it off with the standards element, and try to make sure that we've got the standards that have been set this year in terms of the number of games played. We kind of get teams who do come to join the Southern Conference League. We've got the infrastructure in place to ensure that they can fulfil the fixtures on a weekly basis, but also have the resources to be able to meet the travel demands that come with playing in that competition. So the door's certainly open for clubs in the South, provided they can demonstrate that they can meet the criteria that have been set for clubs to enter that. And I think with any competition, there'll be some learning. So some clubs might join this year and may find out that it's not for them moving forward. So yeah, there'll be with any competition at the AFL, we always review what's happened. We do player surveys, we do club surveys at the end of each season. We'll have a face-to-face meeting with the clubs. So we'll review the competition, and then once we've done that, we'll decide on the next steps in terms of what we're doing in 2020 and what the makeup of the competition looks like going forward.
And finally, David, this weekend, as we said, it's the final, the Harry Jepson Trophy at Hemel Staggs, and next weekend it's the grand final of the Southern Conference. So you're looking forward to it, and optimistic for the future as well for the game in the South.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're at Aldershot, the military, the Army Rugby Stadium at Aldershot on Saturday the 14th of September. The Southern Conference League Grand Final kicks off at 3 o'clock, and we've got an Eastern Division plate final taking place at 1 o'clock. So yeah, the semi-finals this weekend, I think they could go either way. We've got London Derby with West Warriors and Hammersmith, and then London Chargers are going to make the long trip across to the Welsh Valley to take on the Cougars. So I think both games will be very difficult to call. So I'm sure we'll end up with two great finalists who have come through and start the season back in April. So I'm sure they've certainly earned the right to be in the final. And then yes, for the game itself, and I'll say we've planted the seed this year with the Southern Conference League. The clubs have had an opportunity to participate in that. The other clubs have been able to watch on from their regions, and then. I think some of the work we're doing with the clubs, tying to like local development plans and tying around the World Cup as well, and some of the opportunities that are coming out of the World Cup. So whilst it might not be a game necessarily in all of these regions, there's some of the work that we're doing around that might be able to tie into some of these clubs in the South. So yeah, I think the future's looking bright for the clubs down there.
David Raybould there from the RFL. Southern Conference seems to work quite well.
Yeah, it does. I'd be intrigued to find out a little bit more about how well it's worked for Hemel as well, because obviously they've gone into it, haven't they?
Yes.
But it's good to see the Southern game thriving, and I noticed London's kids put a right scoreline on Leeds at the weekend. I think this 44-16 or something like that. So the Southern game, certainly the player pool is growing, the talent down there is getting better. So yeah, I'm all for the Southern game growing.
Well, a big good luck to the four teams who are still involved in the Southern Conference playoffs, and also the Harry Jepson Trophy finalists, Sherwood, Wolf Hunt and the West Warriors this weekend. Just before we go, a big 135th birthday to Underbank Rangers, we should say, and a big congratulations.
Oh, yeah. No, I like that.
Good. And a big congratulations as well to Championship and League One more generally. They've got a sponsor, which is good. Betfred has confirmed that they're extending their deal, which is very exciting.
Indeed.
Speaking of exciting, we've got some internal news to bring everyone some exciting news. Alex, you've got a new gig.
Swap deal, isn't it?
It's a swap deal. Alex Firstlet, congratulations. You're the new editor of a certain magazine.
I am indeed.
Nuts.
Is that still a thing?
I don't know.
How old are you?
Probably more credible.
Old enough to remember nuts, mate.
Go on, Alex. Sorry.
I think it's a move that works for both me and Matt. it plays to my strengths, and it plays to Matt's strengths as well.
Let's specify this.
Yeah, so
I am the most disorganized person in the history of certainly of League publications, and therefore trying to edit a magazine is not particularly great. Alex is a bit more organized than I am, and I tend to be the saddo that works all the hours under the sun chasing pointless stories, and therefore that works better for a website. So
you're the new editor of TotalRL.com.
Yeah, returning second spell. Did it for a couple of years. I can't remember how long I did it for, but and then I'm back, and we've got some exciting plans for the website that will be revealed in due course, but not for now, because I'm just getting my feet under the table and trying to sort various weird things out. But no, we're excited.
Congratulations to Perry.
Thank you.
Aaron, you got any news?
No. I'm off to football this weekend.
Good.
Yeah. I went to football last night, Ben. It was brilliant. What, I went in the away end.
Where were you?
Chesterfield.
I'm an NPL boy. I was at the Pro Act,
watching Halifax Town go top of the league.
I was in an away
outstanding
end last night.
Bolton. Where were you?
Bolton.
Oh, didn't you beat a team that hit puberty on penalties?
We beat Bolton Wanderers on penalties.
The youth team, well done.
Yes.
Yeah, I was at Lancaster City for those.
Apparently, Bolton normally.
Yeah, I've got bags under my eyes.
Apparently, Bolton normally kick off their evening games at 8 o'clock, but it was 7 o'clock because they all had to get to school in the morning.
Sending our best wishes to all the supporters at Bolton.
Jage, the Bolton team, 19. How many schools do you know that still have kids in at 19?
None. Oh, they'll be boring.
Just before we go, just a quick mention for the NRL. Alex, what do people need to look out for?
Well, it's the last week of regular games. And as I mentioned, there is the weird thing that if Brisbane do lose and Cronulla and West draw, they both end up
What's
in the
What's the relationship between Cronulla and West?
Well,
like?
Are we
going to be looking at an Austria-Germany situation?
Probably not. But the winner of that game gets into the top eight and the loser doesn't. The Cronulla at 8th.
Love some
tonight.
Sort of aforementioned Austria-Germany situation where they play out a draw. That'd be amazing. I would imagine that in rugby league. You couldn't even make You couldn't even make that look coincidental, could you, in rugby league?
Just give the ball to the forward.
Just
run.
Just them both
do that,
kicking
do that
the ball
times.
On first tap.
It would literally work. Brisbane play the day before. If they lose, then they
This happened when Halifax won the league in 1986. Where they needed a draw to win.
Were you even born in 1986?
They needed a draw to win the league. Featherstone needed a draw to stay up, and lo and behold, it was a draw.
Well, there we go. That's one for the archives, isn't it? Go on, Alex. Sorry.
We've got to keep an eye on Canberra as well. They're doing brilliantly. They're third place. They should be. Well, they're pretty much in the top four now.
Come on, England.
They've done brilliantly. They've done absolutely brilliant. John Bateman has been a revelation over there. He shouldn't have been, but he has been.
He
shouldn't have been, because they should have known how good he was.
All right.
There we go.
Let you off. Well recovered.
Right, good. That's the end of this week's Total Rugby League show. A big thank you to David Raybould for joining us from the RFL. Also, a big thanks to Mr. Aaron Bauer, to Alex Davis, and to Matthew Shaw. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.